All right. So, good morning, everyone. I am Kamala Rampersad de Silva, CEO of the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute. It is my pleasure to welcome you this morning to our session entitled Output, Not Input, Increasing Productivity in a Remote, Socially Distanced World. In as much as there's been challenges with the lockdown imposed by governments, there have also been some successes. Many businesses, like the CCGI, has moved to online platforms to ensure business continuity. And we have discovered something wonderful. We are able to connect with persons across borders, and we are saving hours of stress from the commute to and from meetings. We at CCGI recognize that those who are best able to adapt and navigate these uncharted waters will not only survive, but thrive. Our panel of IT professionals, technologists, and social media experts will illuminate the many benefits of remote work, including access to the best talent, freedom from the soul-crushing commutes, and increasing productivity outside the traditional office. They will tackle the many issues, including benefits and challenges with the multitude of social media platforms and online offerings. Share how your business can improve seamlessly in the online environment. What are the pitfalls and opportunities that await you? We expect that today's session will help open the eyes of many to the impressive features which are not generally possible in the physical environment. And in fact, will underscore that following the conquer of COVID-19, many will continue to embrace this new online environment. I would like to make a few housekeeping announcements before we go to the panel. We would like everyone to remain on mute during the initial panel discussion. You will be invited to make contributions or ask questions. There's an icon at the bottom of your screen to raise your hand when you want to get the moderator's attention. You will need to unmute yourself and then press the mute icon again as soon as you are done to minimize disruptive noises. You may also make comments in the chat feature, which will be read out during the session. As always, our technical support is provided by Christy Johnsler Crouch from SmartServe Limited. Christy's services are outsourced, and we are really very pleased with the excellent support she provides. So those of you who are new to the environment and would like to get online support for your Zoom meetings, you can contact Christy as we did and outsource that service to her. Please note too that this meeting is being recorded and that the recording will be sent to you afterwards by Christy. She will ensure that the recording is also available on the CCGI website and so available to everyone who is interested. We would also be using clips of these sessions to share on social media. So we have a very distinguished panel of speakers today. We have two panelists from Guyana. The first is Dr. Rosh Khan, social media expert of Social Rank Media, and Eldon Marks, founder and CEO of V75 Incorporated and founding director of Nexus Hub Incorporated. We are also joined by Lewis Kinley, co-founder and CEO of Caripay Services Limited, and Karen Rose, mobile and online sales educator from Jode Island. Our moderator is, as always, our expert, the chairman of the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute, Mr. Nigel Romano. I now hand over to you, Nigel.
Thank you, Kamala, and I want to thank you for putting together another excellent panel of experts to share with our members and other interested parties. This is an opportunity. I mean, you hear people speak all the time about not wasting a crisis, and I think it was Rahm Emanuel who said it first, or who was attributed to have said it first, Chief of Staff to Obama. The point is that here we're moving with great speed into a really online experience. I mean, I've been on so many Zoom calls and team calls and collaborating via Teams and Skype for Business, and Lewis gave me another name yesterday. And it is an opportunity, and I'm hoping that our panelists can guide us and show us how we can benefit from this new way of working. It's a lot more efficient. In the title we had output, not input. When you're focused on output, you can hide. When you can't hide behind output, you have a problem. So this is a blessing and a curse, a blessing for those who are focused on really producing quality stuff, but it's a curse for those who hide behind all kinds of nebulous stuff. So I'm glad that the panel is here with us, and I'm glad and I'm looking forward to hearing their words of wisdom. So I'll shut up now and hand it over to Rosh to kick us off this morning.
Thank you. Dr. Khan. Thank you very much, Nigel. Thank you, Kamala, to all the wonderful panelists on here and to everybody that's tuning in. I know there's a lot of things you could be doing this morning, but you chose to be here, and we're grateful for that. And I look forward to the rich discussion. All right, so let's start with some data. That's a good place to start. Let's start with some metrics, right? So according to eMarketer, you know, they've seen a 19.7% increase in just general web usage from January to March of this year. And now we're coming down to the end of April, so I guess those numbers will get submitted soon as well. But here's what's interesting. It's not just one generation. You know, sometimes we think about social media, or we think about, you know, online usage, and we think, oh, that's for the millennials and for the younger folks. But when you dig into the details, you start to see that this web usage that we're talking about, it spans all the generations. So every generation is turning to social media to stay connected. And an interesting tidbit is the fastest growing demographic is actually the middle-aged folks. You know, everybody else, the younger folks they've been on the platforms for a little while, but, you know, granddad and auntie and mom and, you know, uncle, they want to know what's going on with my family, with my nephew, with my son, with my daughter. And so they're jumping on the platforms as well, right? So it's interesting to note that. There's also some research that was done by Globe Web Index, and they said, depending on the generations, you know, it'll be anywhere from 15 to 30% increase in social media usage. And then Facebook actually put out, I think it was just about a week ago, they put out a statistic which blew my mind, that said that there's a 70% increase in the usage of their family of apps. Okay, so they're not just referring to Facebook, they're talking about WhatsApp, they're talking about Instagram as well. And those platforms, they let you know they're owned by Facebook now, right? I mean, when you turn them on, you see that welcome screen, they tell you from Facebook, you know, on both platforms. So it's interesting to note all of the metrics. What does this tell us? It tells us that online consumption of content is at an all-time high. So that's both an opportunity and that's a challenge, right? So the opportunity is tons of people are online. This is a great time to put our stuff out there and hopefully, you know, get seen by the right people. It's also a challenge because activity is also at an all-time high. And if you want to use the word noise, you know, you might say there's a lot more noise on the social media platforms as well. So the challenge is, how can I create content or set up my campaigns in a way so that it breaks through the noise and it actually resonates, you know, with who we're trying to target? And that's what we've got to be reminded of, that old adage, right? Effective marketing is about crafting the right message to reach the right audience at the right time, right? If you mess up any one of those variables, your marketing may not be effective. So the beauty about social media is that everything's a data point, right? What's interesting is when you look at how the algorithm is used, and sometimes I share this, and people get a little scared. So that's not what I'm trying to do here. But you know, just slowing down, for example, when you're on your Facebook newsfeed, just slowing down, that is a data point that's collected. How long are you looking at that specific type of content without liking it, without commenting, without sharing? you know, sometimes people ask the question, why am I always seeing, you know, content from this person or from this source, and I'm not liking or commenting or sharing? Well, because you keep looking at it, right? So it's important to understand there's a lot of data collection that's happening on Facebook, and for businesses and entrepreneurs, you can leverage a lot of that data to do, you know, hyper-targeting and to specifically set, you know, who's going to see what kind of content that you decide to put out there. But before we get into, you know, the technicalities of hyper-targeting and the different types of campaigns you can run, I think it's really important to talk about, you know, two fundamental shifts. The first shift is a mental shift, right? We have to accept the new normal. I think that's the phrase of 2020. You know, we're hearing new normal and we're hearing pivoting, right? Those are the two buzzwords for 2020, right? So we've got to accept the new normal and we've got to, you know, pivot accordingly and realize that we're moving towards what some people are referring to as a low touch but high tech economy, right? So consumer behavior is going to change. And that means that we need to fundamentally change our approach and our mindset and our perspective as well. All right. So I think that's shift number one. And shift number two is not to take everything that we've been doing in the offline space. So we've been running ads on TV. We've been running, you know, ads in the newspaper. Okay, let's just put it online. Let's take it exactly as it was and let's throw it on Facebook because Facebook's free and Twitter's free, and let's just throw it onto YouTube and expect it to work, right? So we've got to move away from the let's just put it online to how can we tailor this and how can we sell, but more so how can we serve with empathy. What I'm seeing a lot of businesses do right now, and it's a big mistake, is they're taking a tone deaf approach, which is to say, okay, there's a lot of people online right now. Let's just dial up, you know, let's turn up the spend on our ads. So they're using the exact same ads that they were using pre, you know, coronavirus. And it could come across as tone deaf if you're not taking the time to think about your consumer or your prospect and are you tailoring it, you know, effectively. So I know these are opening remarks, so let me stick a pin in it right there and hand back over to you, Nigel.
Thank you, Ross. That was an excellent introduction. Lewis, you want to give us your perspective on the payment side, on the EML KYC side? How do you see this?
Yeah. So thank you again, Ross, for the data. And thanks, Nigel and Kamla, for the opportunity here. You know, I think as folks are moving online, obviously they're recognizing that the velocity with which you can engage customers and really complete that sales cycle is actually just speeding up far beyond what it was in the physical world when, you know, you used to rely on that online ad spend to drive people to your physical locations or to really engage and schedule an appointment, whereas now you're much more able to close that deal right there, right? You engage with the customer immediately. You can really get to them when they're most ready to buy. Mm-hmm. I think everybody's aware that the longer that contact goes before you get the deal done, the less likely it is that you're going to get that business. But I think that also, you know, I might be a little bit of a Debbie Downer here in that I think it also creates a lot of risks. You know, as there are a lot of shifts to do everything digital, there's a lot of just do whatever works today without necessarily planning and really considering all the different aspects. So bringing it back to social media, when you look at engaging with your customers there's now a new risk that wasn't nearly as present before or as common of phishing, mm-hmm. where your brand might be impersonated to get money or information from people who otherwise might be your customers. But now that risks really creating a lot of damage to your brand as people say, hey, this company got impersonated and, you know, I lost all my information. So I think that's one risk to be aware of. You know, phishing, it's not new. I think everybody that's gone through a risk management seminar has at least heard of it and heard some of the basics of don't click links and emails you weren't expecting. But those risks really get amplified and made more complex as everybody jumps to new digital channels without a full comprehensive strategy or training for their staff on that. Mm-hmm. So that becomes really critical now in industries where, it's maybe not just a simple, $50 credit card transaction, but maybe somebody is buying a more expensive product that they need to verify who they are, or they're accessing, insurance or other financial services where that AML aspect comes into play. And we see a number of companies saying, well, for our risk profile, we're actually willing to just accept a simple photograph of your ID, of your driver's permit. And because we don't really have anything set up, we're going to take that over WhatsApp, which, be that what it may, that solves a problem, right? But that also now exposes your customers and your company to a lot more risk. When you look at data protection acts and the e-signatures acts, that doesn't really comply. Mm. When you have customers' personal information distributed on lots of different devices, maybe you control those, maybe you don't. Maybe your IT has the ability to lock those and wipe them if the device is lost or stolen. More than likely not. If that's a personal device, all that data that's received over WhatsApp just sits there with the cameras that you took, a picture of your kids. So if somebody downloads a malicious app or they get phished somehow, now all that customer data that was on that device just got snatched. And when companies are willing to accept just a photo of an ID to onboard you, now you've just exposed all your customers to identity fraud. So there's, we want, obviously business needs to be able to continue and keep moving ahead. Customers still have to be able to access the services, the products that they need, right? It's not optional for somebody to renew their life insurance policy, right? That they're going to find a way to do that one way or another. But you want to do that without exposing them and your company to more risk than is necessary. I think to throw a little bit of data in there, the average cost of each record lost in a data breach is upwards of 150 US, which if you think about the, cost of customer acquisition and the lifetime value of some of those customers, that can really take a dent in your revenue from that. So that's, I think the other issue there is that customers don't have a common channel, right? One company wants it from email, one company wants something through WhatsApp, and one company wants it wherever. So having that, now your data is just all over the place. And social media, it's interesting, is in some ways a really strong way to verify who someone is, right? If you've been on Facebook for 10 years, you have a lot of evidence that you are who you say you are. At the same time, there are a lot of fake Facebook accounts out there, right? So you can't just rely on that as your source either. There's a lot of work going into making that a more trustable process. But we'll get into that a little bit later. I think the key thing is just to take away that, while everybody's moving online, we need to train our teams on how to mitigate some of those risks. Mm-hmm. And we need to work on, educating customers as well, so that they don't fall victim to any of that.
Exactly. Well, thank you, Lewis. That was a sobering take on the opportunity. We have to be careful. There are predators out there waiting to pounce. Eldon, over to you.
All right, thanks, Nigel. Definitely without a doubt, in times like these, having, or at least just thinking about strategy, that's pretty critical and it's the key. And what's most important is that we consider a fluid type of perspective, because there's a lot going on. There's a lot of shifting around, so many variables to consider. But what I'm looking forward to sharing is, you know, our perspective from a tech company standpoint in terms of navigating the shift. We've always been, you know, to some degree, a company that works, that has some degree of teleworking involved in what we do. We have work from home Wednesdays with our team. We use some amount of tools to connect individuals to keep projects on track. And but the shift itself has actually thrown us 100% into an area which, you know, even though we're in tech, it's still an unknown area. And we've had to actually double down in terms of coming up with fluid strategies to cope with this shift. So I'm looking forward to sharing that as well. So just to give you some previews in terms of what we have to look at, it's from the inception, we had to increase our usage of our collaborative tools. So typically we would use tools like Asana for project management. We would have WhatsApp for just general casual, you know, chats. Slack is a tool that we typically use. So we've had our usage in terms of those tools to stay connected has gone through the roof. And what we've done also is instituted in terms of just keeping the team connected. We have a lot of impromptu meets. So we use Google Meet for that. So people would just connect and we would share the link on the groups and they would jump on quick calls and we would discuss various things and jump off, in addition to our daily stand-ups. And those have increased as well, just to keep the entire team connected. So we have quite a lot of staff. We have around 17 full-time, and then we have a number of apprentices and interns that we need to stay connected with. So having these tools and, you know, employing practices such as increased meets has sort of helped us straddle that shift. But most importantly, in terms of a business standpoint, especially in tech, you may consider that, or at least some persons may assume that tech is unaffected by COVID business-wise, but it's not. The ripple effects are everywhere. So as a company, we've actually had to organize a special corporate COVID opportunity analysis meeting where we identified possible avenues. We looked at our internal strengths in terms of our specializations, what we can actually bring to market right now, and what we can possibly get into very quickly to bring to market. And then we use that to narrow down possible opportunities that have now become trending through COVID. And so I'm looking forward to sharing that as well.
Nigel, I think you're mute at the moment.
Yes, I am. Sorry. Yes. Thank you very much, Eldon. Great stuff. Kellan, over to you. I know you've been doing a lot of work in this space recently. So let's hear what's happening.
Yeah, so a lot of the work that I've been doing as of late has been trying to get more businesses to start building their digital homes, aka their websites, because when you have your website built, there's a lot of things that can be integrated into it that is going to help you from a variety of key fronts. So like one big part is your analytics that are available that your website can offer you that goes a lot deeper than what you would get on just social media alone. And then also e-commerce can be integrated into your platform so that you can also begin to sell online. One of the reasons why, you know, you want your websites to be e-commerce ready is because most businesses right now in the Caribbean that do not have their website and they're selling via social media, it's all manual. So all of the work that's happening is has to be actioned by somebody. So somebody messages the business and somebody has to respond. The problem is that we're dealing with algorithms. So the messages come in, some of them are going to your spam folder. Instagram has split the DM messages up from primary to general. So it just creates more inefficiency when just trying to sell online. And then on top of that, it can open your business up to same thing that Luz was talking about with respects to risk. So if your website is built for e-commerce, you can have all of your sales streamlined on that platform and then go through secure payment processors like a WePay, like a PayPal, and so forth, FAC for, as another example. The data that is accessible with our websites, we can start to see when we have things like Google Analytics set up, as an example, onto our website, we can see where the traffic is coming from. We can see exactly the keywords as to how we are being found online. We could see what countries people are coming in from. We could really dial in with understanding who our audience is and what they are looking for when they are coming to our websites. That will allow us to make better business decisions with what we do moving forward. One of the things that I want to stress to people as well is being guided by the data at this point in time. So we have access to tools that allow us to understand audiences in our countries and in other countries. So like one of my favorite tools that I use on a daily basis is a tool called Google Trends. Google Trends allows me to specify a country, specify a timeline, and input a keyword or key phrase, and I'll be able to see exactly what the interest is like on that particular topic, keyword, or key phrase in that country for that timeline. That will allow me now to say, okay, you know what, if I want to create content or if I want to bring in products to my business to sell, rather than just guessing at the content to create or the product to sell, I could jump on a tool like that, put in, you know, Samsung S20, because, you know, phones is one of my businesses, put in the product and see exactly what people are searching for with respects to that term in that country over the specified time. It would then show me what topics they're looking for. So if I want to create content and I realize these people are searching for how do you reset a Samsung S20, that would be a perfect blog or a perfect piece of content I can write. Mm-hmm. Also, if I want to bring in products, like let's just say, you know, I'm thinking about adding the Samsung S20 to my shop, I could type in the S20. And if there's an interest, if there's a high interest, I could say, well, this might be a good decision because I know that people in my target audience are looking for it and I can add it to my shop. On the flip side, if I see that, hey, people are not searching for this product whatsoever, I can make a more informed decision to say, I'm going to bring it, but I have to do a lot more marketing to get the information on that product out there. Or I could say, you know what? People in my target audience are not looking for that product at all. Maybe it's best I take a pass on adding that product to my shop and move on to something else. Now more than ever, you have to be more concise with what you do, because at the end of the day, we want to spend, we want to invest, but at the same time, we're trying to hold on to as much cash as possible because we have no idea how the pandemic is going to play out, right? So we want to spend, but we need to be more precise. There are tools available to us that give us great amount of data on our target audience. And if we learn what those tools are, how they work, what type of data is available, it is going to greatly impact the decisions we make with what type of content we put out there, exactly how we put that content out there, and what products or services we can then put on the markets so that we can get a greater return on investment. So I'll end with that there.
Thank you very much. So what I'm hearing is that in this new environment that we have been, it's almost accelerated into as a result of the pandemic. We need not only to educate customers, but we also need to educate the people who are using the platform so that they can become a lot more aware of the risk involved. Luz mentioned cybersecurity, but also the benefits in terms of how you can specifically target the audiences that you're looking at. It seems to me too that we also need to be mindful about how we manage our teams in this new environment. Because I am not a fan of meetings. I tell people meetings are not to share data, they are to debate and decide. And I sense I've been on so many Zoom calls for the last few weeks. I've been using Zoom for the last 5 years, but I've never used it so much in my life. And if you're not careful, you can have people just sitting in meetings all day doing nothing. And again, we are focusing on output, not input. So you have people sitting in meetings and looking busy, and there is no output. So I'll put it back to Rosh. And Rosh, what should senior managers, directors be looking at? What would be some of the key things? And I see my good friend, the PG is on, Michael. Welcome, Michael. I mean, Michael is running a huge trade union. He's involved. Are there opportunities for collaborating with the membership, for educating the membership? What are the opportunities, Rosh?
Thanks, Nigel. You know, I think it comes down to some fundamental paradigm shifts that we need to make. And traditionally, we've had this idea of if the folks are in their seats and they're keeping it warm and we see their fingers moving at the computer, then they're doing what we're paying them to do, right? So I think we need to move away from that model. We've needed to move away from that model for a while. But it's just become very obvious with everything that's happening right now. If you can get the same amount of work done in 1 hour, then why are you taking 4 hours to do it or 6 hours to do it, right? So let's move towards an hours versus output mindset, right? Where we're focused on the output as opposed to the hours it takes. If we've got somebody who's smart on the team and they've come up with, you know, something that can automate a process and make it run even faster, or they figured out how to use some, you know, collaborative software, you know, to turn what would normally take an entire day into finishing it into 2 hours, are we going to penalize that person or are we going to incentivize that person? You know, and is that something that we can replicate and duplicate and then use to drive more efficiency and more effectiveness, you know, across the entire organization? Because I think the mistake we make sometimes is that we sacrifice long-term effectiveness for short-term efficiency, right? So what I mean by that is we're so focused on doing what's efficient for the next 5 minutes or the next hour that we lose sight as to, well, is this effective over the long term? And you know, we define effectiveness as doing something that gets you the best result today that will set you up to get even better results in the future, right? So it's not just about that sort of 5 minute mindset. A lot of this comes down to culture in the organization as well. So we have an opportunity to audit our culture. You know, we throw around that term a lot. You know, people talk about culture a lot in organizations, but what is culture? You know, culture is what's happening between the relationships of people that work in an organization, right? It's not something that you just put up on a board and you put up on the wall. It's what we feel. It's that thing that perhaps is a little intangible. So how are we getting everybody on the same page? You know, how are we driving trust? How are we ensuring that people know that, listen, my manager, my senior manager, my supervisor, that they have my back during this process? You know, we talk about having an open door policy, but now we're not working in offices, right? So maybe we need to change that terminology, right? We're not working with doors right now. Maybe we need to have an open Zoom policy. I don't know what you want to call it, right? But we've really got to sit down and think through, okay, how are we going to pivot our culture moving forward? Is it something we've thought about before? Is it something we need to put more emphasis on now? And then let's set up, you know, what we call a win-win agreement. A lot of times we see issues in organizations because folks just aren't on the same page. So you may have, you know, a team member that's plugging away, doing what they think is what they're supposed to do. And you've got a senior manager who's got a completely different expectation. Mm-hmm. And that little thing can lead to massive chaos, you know, in the organization. So it's really important that we set up, you know, this win-win agreement, you know, performance agreement, if you want to call it that, to say, moving forward over the next week, the next 4 weeks, the next 3 months, here's what we expect of you. And that's not for a manager to just create that document and just hand it over and, you know, treat people like robots. Here's what you're supposed to do. That should be a living document, right? That you should run some form of consultation with the individual to find out, you know, what's their take on what you've presented. So what are the 1, 2, 3 main pillars of what they're supposed to do? Specifically, what's the measurement? How will we know that they've been successful? So are you specific with your metrics for success, right? Or your KPIs, whatever you want to call them. Mm-hmm. And then have you applied an adequate weight to it? So if there's 3 primary functions of an individual, it may help to say, let's grade this. You know, role number one, or function number one is 50%, you know, role number two is 25%, role number three is 25%. It just helps everybody to get on the same page. Because what you don't want to do is have the best intention, but move towards a low trust environment where you're just tweaking and reprimanding folks because they're just not getting it right. So you're always course correcting them, but you're not involving them in the process. You know, there's something that we refer to as counterfeit behavior. And I think it's really important that managers especially are cognizant of that, you know, phrase, you know, counterfeit behavior. It's like counterfeit money. It looks like the real thing, but upon closer examination, you realize it's fake, right? So you may be saying all the right things via email or via Slack or via WhatsApp, but when it comes to the actual interaction and to what you say when the person's not in the Zoom meeting, or what you say to others, or to the emails that you send to the team, are you actually being counterfeit in what you're doing? So this is a great time to just run a self-check and run a self-assessment to make sure that, you know, you're doing everything you can as a manager or leader to get everybody on the same page.
Thank you. Lewis, you mentioned the phishing. What are the solutions that people should be aware of? What kinds of questions should we be asking of our IT experts? What kinds, where what should we be mindful of?
Wow, that's a
big question.
Yeah, there are some really easy ones. You know, there are, so the traditional security model that people have used is, we want to build the best engine to detect all the bad things. Mm-hmm. Right, we want to be able to identify where the scams are and, you know, who the bad actors are. The problem with that model is that they're always going to be new bad actors. They're always going to find new ways to attack you and impersonate you. So there's one product that I really like to recommend that flips that model on its head and actually says, we know what all of the good actors are, right? It's much easier to define the list of what's known to be good. And that's, the company is called MetaCert. It's a really simple browser plugin. For some folks, you know, it can be free. Otherwise, I think it's, you know, pretty minimal monthly cost for businesses. You can plug that in, have your employees run that, you know, on their browser, on their phone. And really what that does is helps employees avoid being the victims of phishing, right? Because that results in well over 30% of all the data breaches is just somebody clicked on the wrong link. Mm. So if you can cut that one out, you know, that's a third of the risk gone right there.
Can you just type that when you're done into the chat, so that you don't have to do it now? When yeah. you're when you're yeah. Thank you.
So that's a really, I think that's like the lowest hanging fruit. Mm-hmm. Obviously there's, you know, IT, as we've moved to a more distributed workforce, you know, before it was easy. Everybody had a work assigned computer and that was pretty much where they accessed all their data. Now that folks are remote, people are signing in on their personal phones, on their personal laptops, and it's really hard to control what's on those devices, right? You can't ask everybody necessarily to install basically corporate spyware on their phones to track what's going on. So then it becomes more important that you really just control which employees have access to what data, right? What are your access policies within your organization so that you can try and limit that risk and that exposure a bit more. You know, I wanted to touch on one of the points that Rosh made was, I think, really good in terms of how you deal with those employees remotely and how you engage them to, especially now, help push the business forward. We've, you know, relied on our teams for so long to, you know, bring good ideas and help us make good decisions and execute on the ideas. And I think now more than ever, we need to say, you know what? They are our best source of, you know, they've been the best source of ideas, but let's let them think about that long-term effectiveness from their roles, from their perspective on the business. What do they see that maybe we're not seeing at all, just because of the networks and the circles they're exposed to? And how could that be applied to transform the business? So I think that culture is really key of having transparency, right? Letting everybody understand the challenges that you're facing, letting everybody contribute their best ideas and their best, you know, their most impactful efforts to solving those problems. So, you know, if we, just a good example is, you know, we were looking at how to, you know, really let end users secure their data as much as possible. And one of the guys on the team just happened across an article from a couple of years ago that actually laid out a really good way of doing it that we hadn't even seen before. And he brought that and we were able to apply that. And I wouldn't have found that, right? If we had relied on down, that wouldn't have came to pass. So that culture is really critical. And I think now more than ever, engaging the whole company in problem solving, painting that vision and letting them really come to solve it with you. You know, that's how you get to that win-win, is when everybody feels bought in and feels like they have a role to play. You know, and that also comes back to now everybody seeing that they have a role to play. They can all understand when you're doing that IT training to say, hey, these are the risks we need you to be aware of. This is why that's important to the business. Now they'll take that much more seriously because they understand that, hey, I can be the weakest link. It's not just an IT, you know, slide presentation we had to sit through. But this could really be materially impactful. I think that getting that buy-in is just really, really important.
And for me, that's another example of input versus output. Again, I mean, just this week I was going through a lot of performance appraisals and people were ticking boxes. And you have to ask, why are you doing this? What's the output you expect? What's the impact? What is going to change as a result of this? This is not about ticking boxes anymore. It is about helping people to get better. It's about helping. It's about delivering value for customers. The conversation has to change at so many different levels. And for me, as you're talking, I wrote down vision, mission, values. How many companies really take the time to clarify what, why they're doing what they're doing, and where they're going, where will they be 5 years from now, and communicate that right down to the organization. And today, for me, it's critical that that conversation has to be had so people understand what output they are impacting. Eldon, share with us.
Yes, Nigel, I think we've entered into a very relevant topic in these times under the circumstances. I mean, amidst all of the tools that obviously we'll have to adopt, we'll also need to adopt a new culture, without a doubt. Shifting culture is probably one of the hardest things to do, even in, you know, traditional settings. Now we have to shift, companies have to shift culture in a very short space of time amidst additional hindrances. And that's the real challenge that we're looking at, because unless we do that with our workforce, productivity suffers, and any other promises of, you know, at least normalcy in the near future, that you know, those are dashed. So, I mean, from our perspective, without a doubt, what I've found, I mean, we've stumbled into this, but before COVID came along, we've always been a company with a magnifying glass over our culture. We've purposefully trained up self-managed individuals, because at the end of the day, we know that a micromanaged type of setting, top-down type of, you know, management structure was just exhausting, and it had some hindrances in terms of growth. So we had something good going initially. When the shift happened, a lot of persons had this, they got preoccupied, and I think this happens across the board. They got a lot of, you know, some of their family members got laid off. They had other challenges that came up as a result of COVID. So these things impair their productivity, as you would expect. And then even when, you know, the ripple effects came to our front door as a company, we had to really double down and think to ourselves, what is the best strategy right now to make good on whatever we have to work with to push through this, to manage their particular individual difficulties during these times, and then ensure that the company's vision, mission, objectives are still maintained and adapted. And one of the major things that worked for us was obviously just having conversations. I mean, that is a, you know, a powerful thing, just having natural conversations with the team. So what I did as a manager, I made sure that, you know, I called every single one of them. I had, you know, remote one-on-ones with each of my team members. Because, I mean, we could have done it in a group setting, but persons may not be so inclined to share about their specifics. So one-on-one sessions got me into understanding what were the individual, you know, difficult situations that they may have been dealing with under the circumstances. So that gave me a good canvas in terms of what I had to work with in terms of, you know, shifting to this new culture, obviously, that we had to adopt really quickly. So moving from there, I realized that some persons were more vulnerable than others. And we were also, as a company, going through a shift ourselves. And then we had a general meeting, again, more conversation. And it wasn't management saying, this is what we're going to do. It's about getting feedback, because the strength is in your team. The strength is in your collective. And everyone has different perspectives to share, especially in a time like this. So the more points of view you get, the quicker you're able to really harness that potential and find solutions really quickly. So I mentioned that we had this special meeting where we looked at the COVID setting under a magnifying glass from the perspective of a company with regards to our culture, as well as the perspective of long-term profitability opportunities and so forth. Within the company setting, what was shared was that, you know, obviously we're all in this together. If we have to make decisions, they may be radical, but they need to be collective. So management will not make this for you. And it's really critical in times like this, because some other companies are resorting to traditional business practices to lay persons off. And that has obviously long-term negative effects in terms of staff morale. It just undermines the situation. So we established certain protocols in terms of collective decision-making right up front. We doubled down on efforts to boost morale, because that morale, we knew that it would actually help us to mitigate the negative effects that they may be individually going through that may impair productivity. So that worked out really well. We invited their inputs with regards to identifying business opportunities, And we've got an excellent listing. I mean, generally, I mean, within Guyana, there's been an upsurge in terms of persons requiring delivery services. So that's one of the major opportunities that we're looking at. Our nonprofit even had to shift in the sense that we're under a grant, and many of the activities that we've planned out in the grant required a traditional setting, but we've actually had to figure out ways in which we can contort that or shift it in terms of virtual settings. And the team really took us through that, and really meaningful suggestions came to the fore, because from the inception, it was us opening it up, establishing that we're all in this together. That really boosted morale, making sure that no one will be put in a difficult position. The company will do as much as it possibly can to get everyone through. And that boost in morale influenced productivity. And another amazing thing that I'd like to share before I hand it off is that what we've realized is that the frequent remote group calls, the conferencing calls, we thought, at least I thought particularly, that it would have an effect on not necessarily bringing us together, because in a traditional office setting, you're physically in proximity. But what we realized is that having those remote calls have actually brought us closer, which is an amazing thing.
You want to expand on how?
Yeah, for some reason, having more frequent conversations directly with individuals or group-based conversations brought about by these tools such as Zoom, Google Meet, and so forth, have brought people face-to-face, literally, well, not really literally, but virtually. But in that regard, in that particular closed circle setting, we get to converse more, we get to connect more, as opposed to a physical setting in the traditional office. Because usually the only times when we actually connect in a traditional office setting is when we would have to, I would actually have to go around the persons, we have a few minutes of conversation, and then I leave. But here we have more persons that are interfacing virtually, and they're all exchanging at the same time more frequently. And through the conversations that have stirred because of the virtual tools that we're using to bring us all together, we've found that our relationships, our connectedness they've all improved, which has positively affected our productivity.
So before you go, I want to ask a question. As you communicate, whether it's by voice and video, or by writing, are you getting to know your colleagues a little better, how they think? Is the level of trust going up as a result? I mean, let me predicate that it could go the other way if you're not careful. But what are you seeing?
Oh, well, absolutely. Without a doubt, before just taking the COVID challenges out of the equation, because challenges do bring a lot of insight into a person's character, taking that out of the equation, having an increased degree of interaction with our team has brought out more understanding of how this person thinks, how they interact. Persons have even become more forthcoming with regards to their contributions. And that's an amazing positive in terms of this shift. But with the COVID challenges, it's really pressed us as individuals. It's really challenged our core values, and we've recently seen persons, their true colors shine. Because, I mean, it's not ideal conditions that we're dealing with.
No.
When persons individually or collectively have to make hard decisions, at least for the good of the company or for the good of their well-being, we get to understand how they think and how they behave out of traditional contexts a bit better. Mm-hmm. So as a manager, in spite of all the difficulties, COVID brings some positives in terms of opportunities to understand, how your team works in extraneous conditions.
Yeah, this is, for me, is an opportunity for growth and outward mindset, so that you use the time to really grow and you know what I mean, develop. Yeah. It's
absolutely, it's, if it's done correctly, that's
of course. And so the point though is that if you are mindful enough,
yes,
you should be able to get the signals where you're yeah. not doing it correctly, and hopefully you can correct. So it's an amazing time. Do you want to share anything else before I hand over to Karen?
No, well, the last thing I'll drop there is I came across this idea of fluid intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And what that refers to is your ability to quickly adapt to changing conditions with a certain goal in mind. And without a doubt, all managers, even just about everyone in business needs to adopt a fluid intelligence mindset. Mm-hmm. Not to hold on to any expectations or just wait it out and expect that things will go back to normal. It's about staying agile. It's about constantly shifting or being open to shifts. And it's about constantly identifying opportunities amidst this new normal that we have.
Yeah. Do you have anything you can share on that? I mean, you can put it in the chat.
Oh, yeah, sure. I'll grab the article and then I'll share it in the chat.
Thank you very much. That's helpful. Karen.
If I could jump in for a quick second, because I think there's such an important conversation and the points that Eldon made. I wanted to add to that intent trumps technique. And what I mean by that is, if your intent is genuine, right? If you really care about the well-being of the collective and the well-being of your team, then don't get too hung up with what model should we use, what's the technique that we should use. Because I've seen the mistake of some managers and leaders, being very robotic or very formulaic, because mm-hmm. this is what they read on a blog post, or this is what we saw from the latest, change management book, and thus we're adopting this, so if you can be a little rough around the edges, but you've got to, if your intention is pure and it's understood, it comes back to the old adage of seek first to understand, mm-hmm. Then to be understood, right? If you're truly seeking to understand where the individual is coming from, and your intent, just do a self-check on your intent. It's mm-hmm. not to turn the person around or to get them to see it from your viewpoint by the end of the conversation. Mm-hmm. If your intent is pure and good, then your message is going to resonate.
No, thank you for that. I mean, it goes back to the whole win-win thing. As you said, intent trumps technique. I was reminded of Matt, I think it's Matt Mullenweg, the founder of WordPress, or one of the founders. And he said one of the things they do, and one of the mantras they have, is API. And in this case, he wasn't talking about application programming interface. He was saying, assume positive intent. So when somebody's communicating with you, use API, assume positive intent. Because he said 99% of the time, the intent is not negative. So, good point. Karen.
Yes. All right, so what I'll add is that one of the silver linings and sobering thoughts that COVID has brought for us is that COVID has really exposed how unprepared our companies and our regions were for the digital change. I really firmly believe that institutions need to take a much bigger stock in training their audience and the public as well, the public that they serve. The digital transformation is going to rest squarely on the shoulders of companies. We need to get more people self-reliant and understanding the digital transformation from each of their own perspectives. We can no longer wait for the government to create programs and initiatives to put people in rooms and leave it up to them mm-hmm. To lead the way. At the end of the day, we know if we have to wait for them, God only knows when that change will actually happen. Every company needs to figure out, what they can do to educate their respective audiences if we actually want to see change in the marketplace. So if you think about it, one of my favorite companies in the world that's been doing this for such a long time is Apple. If you've ever gone into an Apple store, so I used to work at Apple back in 2009. And I was amazed at the culture that they cultivated, and it just made sense. They were one of the first companies that introduced education of their products inside of their stores. And the whole mantra at Apple was, if we can't teach you how to use our products and services, where else would you go to learn it? And if you don't understand how our ecosystem and everything works in the ecosystem, how can we expect people to adopt the technology and the software? And it just made so much sense. And I never understood why nobody else at the time was doing it. Apple really changed the game when it comes to public education, because again, they were the only retail store that was actually focused on doing it. So when you walk into an Apple store, they have workshops for free that teach you on coding, photography, app development. And you're thinking, well, why on earth would I go to Apple to learn how to take photos or learn how to build apps? But then again, after you take the course, the next best thing is, okay, well, I need to now buy something to take photos. Well, here's an iPhone. Let me buy the iPhone. Or, you know, I need to program apps, and they taught me on an app that's only available on macOS or iOS. So I need to now invest in an iPad. And so it's social selling at its finest, right? Mm-hmm. Apple didn't wait for the government to launch a public education course on coding. They took it upon themselves to build out their own programs in-house and get experts in from in the market to come in to teach on programs that they might not have specialized in, but again, it works all within their ecosystem, and they focus a lot on curating those programs. We have not done that here in the Caribbean. There's almost nowhere that you could walk in and learn about any sort of program that will help you within this digital transformation. Back in Toronto, we had free night school classes that taught people how to build WordPress websites. Free night school classes offered at some of our local colleges, right? If the companies aren't saying to themselves, well, you know what? I'm a telecommunications company and we can't get people to use our fiber internet services. We can't get people to take monthly plans. Why aren't you educating people on the different benefits that they get by having this service? If you want people to use a monthly, take a data plan, you could do it in a roundabout way by teaching people about e-commerce. And maybe they believe that, you know what, using your service is going to give me the best possible chance at keeping my e-commerce business alive and running, and I always have access to the internet. So we have to figure out different ways that we can educate the audience and push the digital transformation locally. If we are not doing that, we are going to be stuck waiting for somebody else to do it, and everybody has that mindset. You look at the lines going into the banks, you look at the lines to pay bills. Why are we still paying bills in a line? And we have a lot of the facilities to do it online, but nobody is taking stock to educate people on becoming more resilient within these times. So if we had done this months and years ago, more public education from, again, a company perspective, everybody teaching, we would have minimized the scramble to now all of a sudden become digital. You know, there was a meme a couple of weeks ago that was circulating where it's like now with COVID-19 and face-to-face meetings not happening, we would have finally would have seen what meetings could have been an email. Mm-hmm. This is the type of transformation, again, which it shouldn't have taken the pandemic to force the digital revolution upon us. This is going to be the great silver lining for us, because there's just no way possible we can go back to how things were working before, because it was not working. But I believe it is definitely a chance for, again, more companies to get online and take the public with them, take their audience with them, and put more stock in educating their audience how to do business. And if everybody starts to do that, it will allow more people to start thinking digital first, and it will transfer within all areas within our country.
Okay, thank you for that, Karen. So I want us to focus, before I open it up for questions from the rest of the participants, I want us to focus a little bit and so if I am a small, medium, even a large business, and I have just put my toe in the water, I haven't really got into the space as yet. From each of your perspectives, what is the one thing that I should be focused on? What should be my first move? And what should I be concerned about? I'll leave it like that. Karen, start off and let's hear your perspective.
So if I'm just starting out entrepreneur, I would honestly start looking at building my digital home, mm-hmm. building my website. And the reason I want to, I'd say start there is because it has never been cheaper and more accessible to build your website. And the amount of data that you can get about your audience so that you can serve people better, and also the fact that you can integrate your e-commerce strategy into your website so that more people can do business with you outside of your physical business hours. Because if you think about it from, you know, your own perspective as to when you might swipe your card online or make a purchase online or purchase a course online, it's probably not between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. It's probably after hours, sometimes late at night, that we do our most shopping, where we're relaxed. We done filled our bellies, the family's and we can sit back and start to shop, right? But if your business is not set up for e-commerce, then you lose one of the most important aspects of selling, which is impulse buying. We've all done it. We've all seen a product or a course online that was at a discount for a limited amount of time and impulse buy. And if you don't have your business set up for e-commerce, you cannot take advantage of that. So
let me ask, how long would it take to set up a website, a basic, and then you can build from there? And two, how much would it cost?
So all depending on the platform, like, so you have platforms like WordPress where you can purchase already built websites from web designers, where you buy it and install it and you just have to customize your colors, your information. You could use a platform like Wix that could allow you to turn around a website in no time. You could use a platform like Shopify that's great for putting your products online if you're more of a product-based business. And you can get these things put up within a couple of days because you have the templates there.
What kind of money are you talking about?
So, okay, perfect example, right? I'll use my two websites for example. It's KarenRose.com and DroidIslandTT.com. When I built Droid Island TT, I purchased my theme, my pre-built website for $60, right? When I rebuilt KarenRose.com, I spent 50 TT on the rebuilding of my website. And that website is my favorite iteration of websites that I've built to date. The costs are peanuts, because now what designers are doing is, rather than build a custom website every single time that somebody wants one, web developers are now building out websites in a box, a theme, as a digital product. So I build this one digital product. I have X amount of layouts inside of that theme. you now purchase it. So now you get a fully developed website that you would have never have built because you can't code. I can't code, right? You would have now purchased it and been able to install it and have a fully developed website. And again, all you need to do is customize that theme, integrate your PayPal or your WePay, and those are free. PayPal is free to use. It is free for WePay to use. You pay on the transaction fees, right? Things like MailChimp to integrate your email list, that is free to start off with. Things like HubSpot for your CRM, where you can track the customer journey, is free to use. Things like your pixels, a Facebook pixel, Google pixel, those things are free to integrate onto your website so you can collect data and remarket to people. Mm-hmm. Now you pay when you are marketing, when you're doing your digital marketing on those platforms, but all of those things can be integrated into your website for next to nothing. And then at that point, when you have all that data coming in and you're putting out your blogs, your cost to have that website is peanuts, because hosting for WordPress websites starts at $2 a month. If you use a hosting company like Namecheap, they WordPress hosting, it starts at $2.38 US a month. Your domain name is a one-time purchase per year that starts at $7 US per year for your domain renewal. When you add those things up, it's next to nothing. And on top of that, even if you don't want to purchase a theme from WordPress, WordPress still gives you a bunch of free themes to use if you want to blog. So $7 US for your domain name, use Namecheap for $2 a month for your hosting package, and then use a free theme from WordPress to start just blogging. Cost is no longer a factor anymore as it was some years ago to get off the ground. So I start with that.
Hey, great stuff. Who wants to go next? What are the risks? Oh, Rosh, go.
I'll dive in. I guess this is the opportunity to...
Yeah, come on, talk. Educate us.
Yeah. All right. So, you know, first things first, I would think strategy first, okay? You know, what at the very basic, you know, what's your short, what's your medium, and what's your long-term goals, right? Mm-hmm. If anyone's saying with any, you know, specificity that COVID-19 is going to be over by, you know, then that's a premature prediction. Okay, we just don't know at this point. There's a lot of factors at play. There's a lot of unknown variables. We're hearing things about a resurgence if we're not careful later on in the year. So we've got a plan, right? So you want to take a step back, look at your strategy, and at the simplest level, look at best case scenario and then look at worst case scenario and all the scenarios in between, right? So think about what can I do immediately to stop the hemorrhaging. If I'm hemorrhaging as a business right now, what do I need to do right now just to survive this period? And then medium and long term, what are all the opportunities out there? Once we've made these shifts, what can we move into? And once you've done that, then you can start thinking about your customers, right? And you don't want to just look at it from a viewpoint of what are the demographics. You also want to think about the psychographics. And that's really, really important because we're talking about social media. Now we can find out the level of education. We can find out what fan pages they like to read. What are their sources of information? What kind of news do they look at? And then based on all that information, we can say, okay, what does the modern customer buying journey look like? So do they go to Google first and do they type keywords in so that they might find your digital home, as Kieran mentioned, and then they can find your website? You know, are they going to YouTube first? Are they attending, you know, what I call the University of YouTube, you know, to see what videos are out there that can, again, educate me on whether I need this or not? Okay, so think about the modern customer buying journey, and then you can figure out, well, okay, where do I need to position elements of my marketing campaign so I get seen by the right person. Remember what we said at the beginning, effective marketing is the right message reaching the right people at the right time. So once you've done all of that, you know, I've got a lot of folks that reach out and say, Rosh, you keep pushing this online thing, you keep pushing this social media thing. What the heck do I post on Facebook, right? Mm-hmm. What is it that I'm supposed to be putting on there, you know, every single day? And before we get caught up in the specifics, there's a model that I share every opportunity I get, and it's called the AEC model. Okay, so the A refers to awareness. So what do you need to do to create awareness? Why do you do what you do? What's the size of your team? What's your mission statement? What is it that you offer? You know, everything that you could think about that will increase market visibility and move people to understand more of what you do and why you do it. Okay, so that's awareness. But we don't just want people to see the stuff, do we? We want them to engage with us, right? That's mm-hmm. the E. We want them to like, we want them to comment, we want them to reach out to us, send us a question, inbox us, pick up the phone. So what are you putting out there that can get people to engage with you in some way? You know, there's this big war between, you know, the tech titans out there. You know, Facebook wants to rule the internet, Google wants to rule the internet, right? And the people forget that Google owns YouTube. And, you know, YouTube is this incredible video platform, but Facebook is trying to play the video game as well. I mean, just look at what's going on with all the lives that they do. You just scroll in your newsfeed and you'll see the algorithm, you know, favors videos more than it ever has in the past. So if you know this and you know your customers are on Facebook, well, now might be a good time to go live. But don't just go live and stare at the camera and not you know, have a plan. You know, what are we going to talk about? Are we going to do, you know, coffee Thursdays or coffee Fridays, and we'll take questions, or, you know, we'll talk to our, you know, share viewpoints from our team members. So it's a great time to think about what can you do to increase engagement. So once you've got the awareness and once you've started to create engagement, what are we ultimately trying to do? We're trying to get them to convert in some way, right? So the C mm-hmm. refers to conversion. And I say conversion and not sale because there are different types of entities that use social media platforms, right? So if you're an NGO, for example, it might not be about sales. Your conversion might be about recruitment, or it might be about, you know, traffic to your site, or it might be about, you know, how many donors did we get, you know, at the end of this quarter as opposed to last quarter. So you really want to take a big step back, look at the AEC model, awareness, engagement, conversion, and then fill out, okay, what type of content will satisfy each one of those, and that will tell you, okay, here's what we need to post, when we need to post on Facebook and all the other social media platforms.
Thank you very much, Ruth. I like your passion. Lewis, you noted in the chat about the whole fulfillment thing. You want to help? You want to look at that a little bit?
Yeah.
I know PayPal is a big issue for us here in the Caribbean. Are there possible distributed ledger blockchain type solutions? Is WePay really a good option? How secure it is? Talk to us about that.
Yeah, Lord, I think just to build on what Rosh was saying, really, you know, folks get their strategy in place, they start driving that traffic, but that last bit of converting can be really tricky. You know, there are a lot of different aspects to consider. It depends on the products you're selling, and you know, looking at that kind of last mile problem, right? How do you actually get paid in your bank account? How do your customers actually receive the products? I know Eldon was talking a little bit about logistics and the demand for shipping. You know, and when it comes to payments, I personally have not tried WePay, so I can't speak to exactly how well it works. You know, I don't know what they've done in terms of security audits or anything on that front. You know,
those are the kinds of questions you need to ask.
Yeah, I think that anyone who's looking at these types of solutions, you know, PCI, right? That's the Payment Card Industry Data Security Standard. Anybody that's doing payments should be able to show you that they are PCI certified. That means that they've had a third-party auditor, somebody who's an expert in this stuff, come in and not just look at the technology, but look at the company. What are their processes and policies that keep your data safe when they're processing those transactions for you? How do they guarantee, you know, the reliability and availability of their services? Do they have a process in place for responding to incidents? You know, what are their risk mitigation strategies? What risks have they considered as a company? You know, because the last thing you want to do is put, you know, put something on your website that lets people send you money, but then they actually end up losing some of that money, or, you know, opening you up to risks. There's a really standard, the Organization for Web Application Security. I can't remember what the last one is, but it's OWASP. They have 10 really simple tests that any site that's doing commerce should at least be able to pass all 10 of the risks on the OWASP top 10. And those are part of every different security audit that you can have. So you guys, you know, there's a push to consider, you know, to move online quickly. One of the things you can look at is that third-party attestation. Was there an audit done, whether it was just data security or payment security? You know, when it comes to really that last mile of accepting payment and, you know, verifying who you're shipping to, you know, that's something that we as a business have focused a lot on, is how do you verify those customers and how do your customers know who they're engaging with and trust you? So really establishing that trusted relationship with your customers, you know, maybe once in the beginning, can really help you do repeat business with them more efficiently. And it really allows for a much better experience with your customers, because they don't want to have to go through the same flow every time, right? That's why folks like Amazon, you know, you save your credit card and then the one click buy, done. That's when those impulse buys really happen. So it's about, you know, you
easy, can make it easy.
That's right. Take your strategy and remove the friction.
Yep. Eldon, you want to say anything else before I go?
Yeah, really quickly. I think those are excellent points. But just going back to your original question, if you're a company, or if you're about to start your company, you're about to go out, just get out the gate there. Definitely strategy. But the real question is it feasible right now? Is your business, your proposed business model, which it probably presumably existed pre-COVID, is it feasible still? And you have to obviously do your assessments, requisite assessments, to see if you can pivot, and you combine that with strategy. But it could be that it just may not work, and it's a very critical thing to have revenue coming in as soon as possible. So so what I'd like to add is just pretty much do a feasibility study, identify whether it's a worthwhile investment of your time and energy once you're getting out the gates as an entrepreneur right now. If not, then, you know, find something else that's more relevant now.
Gentlemen, we are at we have a few participants. We have Dexter and a few others, Sheena, Stephanie. Any questions for the panel? We have some serious experts here. What are your questions? And don't all rush to.
So while they're thinking that through, Nigel, I do have a question based on our discussions yesterday. I thought that Eldon in particular had raised some really important benefits that companies can get outside of what you are used to. So if he could share with us just briefly, what are some of those? Because, for instance, he spoke about when you have online meeting and you can automate the minutes of those meetings, for instance. So if I understood that correctly, Eldon, what are some of those types of benefits to moving in an online environment that allows meetings to be that much more efficient, so that we really seamlessly begin to exist in a new world?
Right, yeah. So building on that, companies are going to be forced to have remote statutory meets. And what we were actually working on before COVID started was a prototype of an application that would record the sessions. It would transcribe them using Google Speech, And then those transcriptions will then be turned into formatted meeting minutes. It's a semi-automated process. Of course, the technology is not perfect right now, mm-hmm. but it will tremendously reduce the amount of time and effort it takes for someone who is unfortunately tasked with that, you know, doing meeting minutes to get through it as quickly as possible. And with COVID, we were considering pairing that with a tool like Zoom, for instance. So you can have your regular statutory meets using Zoom, and then there's a component that takes care of tracking the transcript and then converting that into your business formatted meeting minutes afterwards for review. It's something that we're currently working on in terms of, you know, looking at the feasibility of it, but we do see how obviously relevant that will be in a time like this. And so that's pretty much experimental at this particular point, but what we have available to us are components that actually just grab the transcripts already. But in terms of transcribing or turning that into your formatted minutes, that's up to you. So Zoom even has a plugin. I can't remember exactly the name of it. We came across it when we were doing our research. Zoom has a plugin that would allow you to just take the audio and then get the text conversions of that audio. So you get transcribed conversations at the end of the meeting itself. So that I'll research on that, and I'll paste the link as soon as I'm through. In terms of other tools, other tools to help this COVID shift, we've picked up a tool called Clockify, which is a time tracking. It's free time tracking. So if you haven't been doing time tracking on your employees, you can pick that up, and Clockify can actually get your employees to track their times if that's part of your model. And Jamboard is another tool that we use, because since you're remote, it's very difficult to do brainstorming sessions with a common whiteboard. So Google's Jamboard, J-A-M-B-O-A-R-D, is a collaborative tool that allows you to take out your tablets with your styluses, and then you can remotely just, you know, do brainstorming sessions and sketch, plan things out as a team in that remote setting.
Thank you very much. Okay, guys, lightning round. Dexter says, great presentation. And he is it's a great millennial panel. I hope he's caught you then, couldn't be in the millennial. and Ikat said, very sound information. We talk a lot about apps and social media. Sam, what about hardware and technical expertise costs for highly manual SMEs wanting to convert? Who wants to take that one?
Ooh,
what about hardware and technical expertise costs for highly manual SMEs wanting to convert?
Yeah, there's a lot. That's a big question. I don't think we have time to go into that too in depth.
But give some highlights.
Yeah, so I think tools like Zapier, I put a link in the chat already, mm-hmm. is great if you have, you know, different systems that maybe have been really manual to date. Zapier can help you plug a lot of things together. No code required, no expertise required. In terms of expertise, you know, I think you can find knowledge on key aspects that you might be considering on, you know, courses like Khan Academy has some really great targeted material that you could spend an hour or two doing a course and really educate yourself enough to be able to get that task done.
Okay. Lightning round, guys. Let's wrap it up. And Kamla, please put the contact details for each one of these guys so people can find them and engage with them afterwards. Okay? Thank you. Sure. Let's go with Karan, and we'll reverse the order.
Yeah, no problem. One thing I'll probably add in this lightning round is every business should keep in mind the relative three basic keys of e-commerce. One being your audience needs to have either a Visa debit card or a credit card to shop online. So mm-hmm. one thing I always do is I try to educate my audience as much as possible about the cards that they can use to shop online, because
I want more people to shop online with my business versus having to do online bank transfers. That's a manual process. If they have to do cash deposits, that requires you to leave your house and go and pay me. And something always happens on the way to the bank, and I you don't end up getting paid right away, right? So first thing is having your clients have a mechanism to pay you online. Second is a payment processor for your website. So every business needs to understand what payment platforms are available for their markets. So you could use First Atlantic Commerce. They partner with pretty much all of the banks around the Caribbean.
Yeah.
That process, you have to go through that process in order to sign up with them. But that's available as a payment processor. WePay is another payment processor that's available for Caribbean countries. And then there's PayPal. PayPal is the global standard for payment processors. So again, that's going to be something that's easy for you to plug in. And then the third key for e-commerce is your business being e-commerce ready. You need to have a website or a platforms to accept payments online to be able to deliver your products and services. So if once you understand that, again, people that have a mechanism like a Visa debit or a credit card to pay you online, you having a payment processor on one of your platforms, and then your business being e-commerce ready, so having your online website or a being able to send digital invoices to people so people can just put in their credit card information and pay you. Once you understand that, you're going to be in a much better position to get commerce happening for you online.
Thank you very much, Eldon.
Yeah, to recap, without a doubt, again, productivity is critical, and making sure that you address that by boosting staff morale as much as possible. Using more of a new agey leadership model would definitely help to ride this valley, and tuning in on conversations like these to inform yourself about strategies and keeping a fluid mindset to respond to changes very quickly, are all critical in straddling these times.
Thank you very much, Lewis.
Well, I think it's just about, while you're moving quickly, really considering those risks and just take stock of those before you deploy your solutions, because you want to move fast. You want to keep your business moving and agile, but you don't want to do that at the cost of, your customers or your business. Really, if your reputation goes down right now, it's going to be much harder to recover from that. Trust across the Caribbean is pretty low on the global scale. So really making sure that what you do maintains that trust and gives your customers a reason to trust you, that's critical.
Thank you very much. And Rosh.
Thank you. Thank you, Nigel. Just quickly, quick recap. Just remember, like we said, with the data, there's more people online than ever before. It's an opportunity, but it's also going to come with the risks, as Lewis mentioned. I like to, I'm a big fan of mnemonics and acronyms and all these things, right? So if anybody remembers, this will tell, how old you are, the good old VCR that we used to put the cassettes in. I use VCR as an acronym, right? Yes, jump on all the opportunities, but don't forget your vulnerabilities, your challenges, and your risks, right? So always think about those things and think about what you can do to mitigate that. Use this time to upskill as much as possible. We mentioned, Eldon mentioned sessions like this. I mentioned the University of YouTube. There's Coursera, there's Udemy. There is a plethora of sources online. You can do Ivy League courses, that are just available, MOOCs. So use this opportunity to upskill. Don't forget the AEC model that we talked about. Awareness, engagement, and conversion. Once you strategize and once you have direction and you're moving forward, remember there's only three ways to make a sale or to increase your sales. That's to increase your number of customers, increase the average order size, your AOV. You may need to upsell them, cross-sell them, sell them other stuff. And number three, increase the frequency of purchases. So I think if you follow those things, you'll come out of this. I'm tempted to say stronger than before, but that may take some time.
Thank you very much. So I have one question for you before I hand it over to Kamla. Have you ever used a VCR, Rush?
Come on, man. I have a sentimental attachment with my cassettes, which are still in my house.
Let's check it. Guys, thank you very much. This was a wonderful conversation. I hope you find an opportunity to do it again in a different forum, but I look forward, and in fact, I'll be calling some of you guys after this to help me with my website. Thank you very much. Kamla, over to you.
Yes, thank you so much, Nigel. And I want to say a very, very sincere thank you to our panelists. I thought today's session was really excellent. You know, you guys have lived up to expectation. Now, just keep in mind, so I was happy that I think it was Rush who shared earlier that it's really my generation that are now adopting a lot of these online platforms, and some of us are not so quick on the uptake. So, Nigel may be a lot faster than me because he's more familiar with Zoom. So as he asked me, can you put the contact information for the panelists on the chat so persons may get it? Guys, that's just not possible for me with a few minutes to go, okay?
If you want, can just type it in before you leave and we'll make sure and get it to the membership.
Right. Because, so I did ask Christy, it will come to, it will be part of the recording that we send to all of our participants. Yes, because I truly believe that all of you have added so much value and that a lot of persons will benefit from really being able to interact with you and possibly get your services. So definitely, I think, and we too for CCGI, you know, would need that kind of assistance. So I'm really, really pleased that we at CCGI are being able to make a difference in the environment to help spread the awareness, to help bring experts together and share what really a very practical decision making that has to happen in this time when everything we do needs to be really revisited. You know, so thank you guys so much for taking your time to come with us this morning. Thank you to all of the participants who also take their time to log in and be part of the discussion and share. Because without you, of course, it's just like with our customers. You know, what's a business without customers? So if you guys have any questions or any comments that you wish to also share with us, we are very open and we are happy to receive it. Thank you all very much. And we will communicate with you again soon with respect to another session.
Take care, guys.
Thank you, everybody. Have a great day.
Be safe.
Take care, everyone.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Stay safe, everyone. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yep.